We went back to the drawing boards and tried to figure out how to meet the utility's concern of sufficient notice so that they could accommodate their billing systems and get ready for an annexation once it was effective, and how we could do that given what annexation law was. So if I can just briefly describe the bill, Mr. Chairman, or the concept that we're proposing here. Sub 1 of the bill, as it is written now, would require cities in both Boundary Commission and non-Boundary Commission jurisdictions to provide notice to any utility or telecommunications utility at the point at which the resolution or ordinance was adopted by City Council for a proposed annexation. In other words, now we're talking about an annexation which is in progress and which is proposed by a city. At that point, and within 10 days after adoption of that ordinance, we would provide by registered mail to the utilities all of the information that they required or that they were asking for in the proposed 2516. We are able to do that now, and we're willing to do that, and we think that will go a long way toward giving the utilities advance notice that they wish to have. In sub 2, we would then provide an additional notice once the annexation was final and once that final date was known to a city. And if we fail to do that within 10 days of the final date of the annexation, then any taxes that would be owing to a city as a result of new territory coming into it would be due at the point at which the utility actually got the notification. So that is the concept in the bill, and I'm pleased that we were able to work out something that both solved their problems and was not unwieldy and unworkable for ourselves.
Thank you. Any questions?
Representative,
and then Representative Markham.
Gary, I'm just curious as to how this is actually going to work as far as the utilities are concerned. The notice given by the city within 10 days after the annexation, what happens then if they make it within that 10-day deadline? The utility receives the information and enters it in the computer so that within the next 20 days, the next billing statement will reflect the excise tax?
Well, in the in our case, in U.S. West, it does not solve the problem of getting the computer programmed to do it on the effective date. Between the effective date of the annexation and the date that we actually get the billing system programmed to handle the calculation of the tax, that period of time will have to be calculated on a manual basis. But we will, under this new language, we should, in almost all cases, be aware ahead of time, well ahead of time, that that's going to occur. Obviously, we can't trigger the billing system until we know that the annexation has occurred and is, in fact, at that point, a legal annexation. But what would happen is, just say that we were notified on the 10th day after the effective date of the annexation. We would, as quickly as we could, then, trigger our billing system to begin calculating the tax based on revenues that were taken in that newly annexed territory. And since prefixes are assigned a different billing date or cycle date in a 30-day cycle in our computer, whichever prefixes were involved in that annexation would then be triggered on their bill cycle date following that 10th day after the effective date of the annexation. Now, that could be as far out from that 10th day as 30 days, in which case, that's a worst-case scenario, in which case there would be a 40-day period of time where there had been no tax collected or no tax calculated, pardon me, for that period of time. We would have to go back and do the best we could to compute that manually. That's the problem. The only way to get around that problem, Representative Weehage, that I know of, is to do what our tax gurus in Seattle were suggesting that we do, which was in the original bill, which was to make the tax effective 60 days after the effective date of the annexation. But I understand the city's problem with that, and I don't think they're being unreasonable in their requests. I don't think we're being unreasonable in our request. This may very well be a problem. There is no just solution to, so we've kind of got to work it out the best we can, which is what we're trying to do with this language.
Thank you. Representative Markham?
Well, looking at this proposed wording in the House Intergovernment Affairs, it might be better characterized as a shotgun wedding. That may be. You're supposed to add on to that.
Right. The Boundary Commission's meeting this evening, and Portland has a couple of annexations up. Walk me through what would happen. You would have already notified U.S. West if it was in that service area.
Right.
And then what happened?
Right, Mr. Chairman. I think the hearing was last night because that was...
It's possible.
About that this morning when I talked to someone on the phone at the city. The city people would have taken that annexation proposal to the city council and in this case did in November of last year. We then submit all of our materials to the Boundary Commission, and at that point we are able to submit those same materials, street addresses, maps, legal description, all of that to the utilities, so we would meet the requirements of this bill. The hearing was conducted in January, and I think it was January the 6th, at the Boundary Commission. But there is a required 45-day waiting period between a hearing and the effective date in Boundary Commission jurisdictions. So the effective date was last night, yesterday, and we received the notification yesterday. So this is a process that started in November at our city council and ended last night with final resolution of that petition at the Boundary Commission. Now it may be, and I didn't ask what the actual effective date is. We're asking for a common effective date of June 30th in the city of Portland. And if that's the case, then there is a period between November and June between the time we initiate that annexation and the actual effective date of the annexation.
See, that would be a big help to the utilities, too, if that were to occur. I'm sure it probably won't occur for all cities, but it certainly would help a lot if it just occurred for the city of Portland. So that would obviously give us enough notice to where we could be geared up with our billing system to accommodate the new calculation of the tax.
We're going to be looking at some other Boundary Commission things and some other annexation bills. Last session, Senator Otto had a bill, or I think it was more of a concept of having one annexation date a year, that everything became effective and he'd figured back from how he'd get on the tax rolls and everything. Would it be helpful to have four annexation dates a year? And part of the problem with Senator Otto's was that people said, well, gee, we won't process these until we get, start processing in November because we want to take them in if it's April 15th or whatever. And the Boundary Commission felt that would not give them an even workload. But if you had it on four quarters, and any time they would do it, then it'd be, you'd catch the next quarter, it'd never be more than 90 days, and more than likely they'd set up their hearings so there was maybe a 6 week before it became effective.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an expert on that section of law, so I can't really answer the question except to say that I think in the city of Portland we wouldn't have much difficulty with that since we are asking for that common effective date. There are certain kinds of annexations like health hazard annexations where you would want to have a pretty quick turnaround and not have to wait. But I think in other circumstances, we, and I can only speak for my own jurisdiction, could accommodate that kind of remodeling. But I don't know what the implications are throughout that whole statute.
Well, I don't think we want to deal with that in here since you got it ironed out.
You might.
That would be a possibility. Yes, Representative Markham.
You got to be careful. You might make a bad bill good and it'd pass.
There's not a huge danger coming out of this committee. Are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wehade.
There was some discussion last time about the issue of specific addresses as opposed to a legal description being provided. Did you two discuss that any further?
Yes. Representative Wehade, the language is now
site addresses to be annexed.
Yeah, there's site address to be annexed as recorded on county assessment and taxation rolls. That's the way the new language would read, and that's fine with us.
Are there any other questions? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to just add that this language incorporates a proposed amendment that I think was offered last time by the electric cooperative representative, and this incorporates the small amendment that she was requesting.
Okay. What I'd like to see us do, if we go ahead and represent.
I guess this wasn't a question for these people, but I noticed this was the city of Portland. I'm wondering if there are other cities that participated in this discussion that might want to make comments, or if this was only the city of Portland, and then some other cities might want to comment. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hasuka, we did run this through the League of Oregon Cities, but there are other cities that may wish to add their comments.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If there's a representative of any other city in the room that would like to comment, I would like to hear those comments before we move on.
But what I would like to see us do with this is get agreement on the committee to the wording, and then we'll send it to legislative council and have it back hopefully for our next meeting to approve.
Along with other cities, Mr. Chair, you may want to hear from other utilities if they may have comments too, because I would not, I don't want my comments to be construed as representing the entire utility industry.
Well, we can't hold you responsible.
Thank you for giving us the chance to work this out, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have anybody else signed up?
Nobody signed up, but you might want
to
ask.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2516? Any other cities or utilities?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just one quick question. I noticed that the amendment from the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative did add electric cooperatives, that wording to this bill. So now we're looking at wording that addresses, find it again, public utilities, electric cooperatives, and telecommunication utilities. Are there other types of utilities that might be impacted in the same way and wish to be included here? Nobody's speaking up right now, so I'm not sure if that's the case or not.
Mr. Chair, I assume it would be a question as it is for U.S. West, where there might be some kind of local taxation question involved, and I cannot, off the top of my head, think of any other utility, groups of utilities that would fall into this category.
What about natural gas?
I think they would be included within the definition of a public utility.
Okay, well, I think the word is probably around that the bill is in, and it's a House bill. If somebody sees that it causes a problem or creates an opportunity, they can certainly look at that on the Senate side. We would be happy to look at that, too, if it comes back to us. Is there any problem with the concepts that are in the proposed amendments? Okay, why don't we go ahead and send them to Legislative Council, and we'll schedule it for a work session next Tuesday or whenever we get the wording back. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on 2516. Thank you all for getting together. And let's see, 2566. We'll open the public hearing on 2566. Yeah, go ahead, John. Tell us what we got.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is a bill that was introduced by Representative Hostica. As he presented the bill at our last meeting, the purpose of the bill would be to exempt certain types of personal service contract, generally personal service contracts, from the state requirement that the individual sign a statement indicating that they are in compliance with Oregon state tax law. As I understood his testimony, it was to the effect that particularly with academic institutions, they frequently have individuals coming in for like a one-day or one-evening basis for a fairly nominal fee, and that these individuals often come in from out of state and are therefore unfamiliar with Oregon state tax law and therefore don't know whether they're in compliance with state tax law or not. And it's difficult for them to sign a statement of this kind when they are unaware of the nature of our tax laws and whether in this particular instance for a very small amount of money they are actually in compliance with that requirement. The bill would also allow the State Department of Revenue to exempt certain classes of contracts from this tax law certification requirement. We did not receive any other testimony at the initial hearing on the bill. And to my knowledge, no one has signed up specifically to testify on the bill today.
And we're just scheduled for a public hearing.
No, hearing and work session if you want.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I did want to indicate that the Department of Revenue, their representative, Mr. Brown, who's at this time down working with the Senate Revenue Committee, had intended to come and address this one, and he indicated to me that the Department of Revenue had no objection to this bill. He also said that they had a bill that has a similar impact, and it was on the Senate side, so that as far as the Department of Revenue is concerned, it seems that there's no problem on this, and they were ready to testify, and if we need to have them testify, I'm sure we can have that done.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on 2566? If not, we'll close the public hearing and move into work session.
Want a motion?
Yes.
Want a motion?
Representative Markham.
Do you want to make it, Bill?
You can make it.
I'll move House Bill 2566. The floor do pass.
Okay, Representative Markham moves House Bill 2566 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? There's no discussion. Edward, call the roll.
Representative Cease?
Aye.
Representative Hostica?
Aye.
Representative Oakley?
Aye.
Representative Stein?
Aye.
Representative Wehage?
Aye.
Representative Markham?
Aye.
Representative Young?
Aye. House Bill 2566 passes. Would you like to carry it, Representative Hostica?
Sure.
Great.
I like easy bills.
Well, you did pretty good today. Okay, well, do we want to hear from Burton on 2516? Okay, let's open the public hearing on 2516 and call forward Burton Weiss. 2697, excuse me.
What did I do?
Just start crossing these off.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Burton Weist, the Special Districts Association of Oregon. House Bill 2697, you will recall this is the third hearing on it, was the bill that dealt with the with repealing, I guess, so to speak, the provisions that provided for the automatic withdrawal from water, sanitary water control districts in boundary commission areas upon annexation. You will recall before 1985, those districts were subject to negotiations or an agreement between them and the cities before withdrawal rather than automatic withdrawal. The 85 session inadvertently deleted that reference in making other amendments, and we've had the situation for the last, or since September 1st of 85, of where all these agreements which the cities and districts continued to live under and negotiate were actually not allowed under the statute. And the purpose of this bill was to do two things, was to, one, reinstate the pre-1985 standards, and secondly, to try to retroactively deal with those agreements and elections that were held between September 1st of 85 and the effective date of this act. At the last hearing, we had amendments from legislative council that would have made the act retroactive. At that time, we thought that took care of the problem. I was shortly thereafter contacted by Gresham and Portland, whose attorneys correctly noted that by making it retroactive, you also made the referendum provision retroactive if you made the entire bill go back, which means that annexations that occurred in 19, as far back as 1985, would all of a sudden be exposed to the referendum provisions. This was not the intent of special districts. We had no desire to try to recreate Park Rose Water District or other districts that no longer exist, nor to upset or to result in a series of elections. Furthermore, I might point out for the committee, referendum would be citywide. This means that it wouldn't be a referendum in the area that was annexed. It would be a citywide referendum. So therefore, I think those who were looking for some protection maybe or some way to upset annexations that have already occurred, that's really not a solution, because it would be very difficult for 200 people who are annexed to get enough signatures in the city of Portland and then convince the city of Portland that they shouldn't have been annexed. So the referendum provisions really make no sense to reestablish them. So after hearing of that inadvertent result of those amendments, I got together with the city of Gresham, Debbie Sagan, earlier this week, and we drafted two conceptual amendments which you have in front of you. I do not pretend these to be legislative council language, but hopefully they are adequate for Joe to draft some changes to. And I believe you have those amendments before you.
Does everybody have those?
Let me go through those very quickly. What this would do is replace Section 2 of Joe's amendments, because in Joe's amendments was also the emergency clause, and we want to leave that alone. So this is not amending the bill. This is amending the 2697-1 amendments. And in Section 2, we would ask that Joe redraft that section to reflect two points. One, that all agreements between cities, counties, water sanitary, and water control districts, which were the three that were excluded in 85, concerning annexation or withdrawal of territory agreed or signed after September 1st, are valid agreements and for the purposes of meeting ORS Chapter 199 and 222. 199 is the Boundary Commission statutes, and 222 is the annexation statutes. So what that says is that if a city, county, or district inadvertently entered into an agreement, or not inadvertently, but knowingly entered into an agreement and thus inadvertently violated the law, that those agreements that they had are valid, and also any agreements they had before 1985 that have been renewed or continue on through that period are also valid. The second amendment would say that all officials elected from the territory of a water sanitary or water control district annexed by a city but not withdrawn, pursuant to 192 and 199 and 222, between the dates of this act, lawfully serve, and their decisions of their boards that they served on were lawful. We are silent on the referendum, you'll notice, and this was the way we could get around the problem of technically exposing to referendums. And it was also the only way we could figure out not to require the cities and the districts to all go back and reaffirm or reenact the agreements that they had. This way, no one has to do anything. The agreements they had are valid, and any agreements they make in the future will be enacted as they were before 1985. Might also point out that what that means is that those annexations in the future from this bill would be subject to the referendum like any other ordinance of the city. We agreed on those. Marge is here, City of Portland. No one's had a lot of time to look at this. We hope we haven't screwed something else up. What we'd ask the committee to do is direct Joe to draft these amendments, and then at the next possible hearing, hopefully next Tuesday, then finally move this bill out if possible.
Questions,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Cease.
So I understand it, Burton. What you're really doing is taking the printed bill, adding the additional ORS citation, creating the new Section 2 with the suggestions on the retroactivity as you propose, and then the emergency clause. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
It's both Boundary Commission and non-Boundary Commission.
No, Mr. Chairman. That was another issue of confusion, was whether or not this bill applied outside or inside Boundary Commission areas. The changes that occurred in 85 only affected within the Boundary Commission areas, Lane County and the metropolitan area. So this bill does not affect what happens outside of Boundary Commission areas. That raised an interesting point, because we had been contacted by a lot of districts, and I had talked to cities who thought this affected them. Apparently, outside of Boundary Commission areas, the statutes are broad enough that a city and district can reach an agreement on service, okay, because there's many, many cities and districts that have service agreements out there. And that statute is apparently broad enough for them. It was just the Boundary Commission statute areas that was so specific that resulted in the problem.
Representative Stein.
Just out of curiosity, the people that were here last time with you, I don't remember what district they were from. Does this mean that they're now okay? Are they in the Boundary
Commission? Mr. Chairman, Representative Stein, yes and no. I have discussed these amendments with Rockwood Water District, with their administrator, over the last 2 days. This solves their agreement problem. In other words, it does, in fact, validate the agreement that they had with Gresham. So it solves that problem. It solves proscriptively the election problem, but it does not solve the issue of the gentleman who needed to be on the ballot that was mailed yesterday, simply because of timing. I have scheduled a meeting with the attorney from Rockwood Water District. We're going to attempt to have a meeting with the Multnomah County Elections Department and see if there isn't some way we can figure this out. I hate to say this, but probably the only way we'll figure it out is conceivably a special election, but we will try to resolve it amicably. And so Rockwood isn't supportive of these amendments, but it does not solve all the problems, and unless we'd have started on this 2 months ago, we just don't have any way to solve their problem.
Okay, any further questions? Does anybody have any problem with getting these to Legislative Council and setting them for a work session? What other, now we had talked about, my city manager talking about the park district, what other districts might be affected? I would assume that most of these districts wouldn't have a property tax, would they? The ones that we're talking about in the bill here.
Traditionally, water districts in particular live off revenue as opposed to bonds, but that's really changing. Sanitary districts in particular do have bonds out, and more water districts, as water is getting more expensive to provide, they're unable to rely on that. So I don't think that's really a difference anymore. I think you're finding more of these districts going to GO and revenue bonds. And in fact, in the bill you'll hear next week on water authorities, one of the things we do in there is clearly define their ability to do revenue bonds and GO bonds, because we think that's what they're going to have to go to rather than rates to build these expensive systems. I think the issue, Representative Young, is whether or not there's districts other than water, sanitary, and water control districts that should have the same provision, that is, the ability to do negotiation and not have their territory withdrawn. Park and Rec District is one that cities and the Park and Rec District in Washington County have contacted us and asked why they aren't in the bill. They are not in this bill because we made an agreement with the League of Oregon Cities that our goal was to put the law back exactly as it was in 1985 and correct that problem. And so we therefore have not added any districts that weren't already in 1985 to this bill and intend to honor our agreement with the League. At some future date, we're not planning on introducing any bill this session, but if it comes up in another bill or next session, we may very well be back saying that park and recreation districts ought to have the same ability to negotiate with cities as water districts. But
what other districts might?
The two that we hear most common are fire districts and park and recreation districts. They are reaching agreements. I mentioned to you that two fire districts in the city of Beaverton are reaching agreements. The Boundary Commission is setting up some of those, and quite frankly, we have concerns about the legality of those agreements under the statute, but we're not competent at this point to tell you whether or not there's a major issue that requires action this session. Our main goal was not to change our word that we gave to League Oregon Cities on what we were going to do on this issue.
Yeah, I may have Mr. Mills work with the League and possibly look at a bill that would
if the cities wanted or agreed that we could add park districts or some other district to this provision, we would certainly work with them and work hard to pass the legislation. until they tell me that, we're not going to pursue it any further.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Cease.
May I ask Roger, Burton, a couple of questions? Burton, in most of those cases, let's say even a park district, what we're really saying is that the city and the district ought to have an opportunity to develop an agreement and figure out how they're going to do it. Under current law, in most cases, the city annexes.
Mm-hmm.
What we're really saying by the possibility of changing the law is giving them a little bit more option about working their arrangements out. Let me ask you in reference to the case of the city of Beaverton with that big fire district. Mm-hmm. Now, the city of Beaverton, as I understand it, for fire purposes, is not part of that district, isn't it?
No, not exactly. That's the end result that they are discussing. My understanding of that now is that there's a contractual agreement between them. But, for example, if Beaverton annexes into that area, even though the fire-serving agency doesn't change, that land is physically removed from the fire district's territory that provides the service. And the way they get around that is they have a contractual agreement to provide service. In that case, it's not a difficulty because they don't have property taxes running.
Businesses on a lot of these contracts, if they in fact are getting a good many of those small ones anyway. But the question of whether there's a way to aid them to be more meaningful competitors in reference to some of the bigger contracts. And then that gets back maybe then again to the percentage issue. If you give a competent, a small business firm that's got a good reputation, say a certain ad, say 5%, would in fact that enable a number of them to seriously compete with some of the bigger contractors and some of these proposals? I guess that's the real question. It would help if you could give us some information on that, because I think the question we're trying to get down to is whether, in fact, the way this bill is put together really does anything in terms of what I think the sponsors want, and whether a percentage approach might in fact do what they want.
Yeah. One other thing you might check on is what percentage of the public works contracts are covered by the Little Davis-Bacon prevailing wage provision, because that is a factor here. Because if you, one of the advantages that a small business, say a five-person outfit, might have over another shop is that their wages may be lower, and it may be a family-owned business and they don't have some of the other benefits. So you might check on that. And I think if we got Kalinowski in here, he could probably name the 20 or 30 businesses that wouldn't apply. And some of them fluctuate. I mean, if you could well come in and bid with, say, an average workforce of 25 over the last 3 years, you get three contracts, and you just go down to the union hall and hire two more supervisors and a crew at each one, you could be at 65 or 70 members. But if you could check on those things, and we're not going to move on this very quickly, but we are going to be looking at some things.
Very well. I'll pull up as much information I can on it.
Great.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just want to clarify a request that we've made. I'd like to know, to the extent that we can, the number of vendors beyond just public works contracts.
But now, well, I think his testimony referred to all vendors, right? The 12,000.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so we are looking
Mr.
at
Chair.
That. Also make sure.
One other point also. Mr. Chairman, I noticed that your information is based on 0 to 19 employees. I presume that's an existing breakdown that's used to keep track of businesses. Just for the sake of making it a little bit easier for him to respond, I mean, if we tried to have him identify contracts for the 25 and smaller employee businesses, it might be extremely difficult to come up with that. I don't know if it would make much difference. If you've already got it, in other words, for companies that are 0 to 19 employees, that probably would suffice for our needs.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Weehage, we haven't had to pull this information out of our database. The figures with the 0 to 19 came from Economic Development Department, but I hope to have a display of figures that'll speak to 19 and our 25. Their cutoff was 19, and since I got the data from them, I just reported what I had.
We don't want to get a bill for a $50,000 contract to get this information.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. The chair will move the committee reconsider the vote under which it passed SJR 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Discussion?
I would be willing to support that motion in order to continue to discuss SJR 2, even though I don't know why we're doing it. But I did have a question of procedure, and that has to do with whether or not under House rules there's a time limit between when a committee takes an action and when the bill should normally have the committee report signed and submitted to the chief clerk. Okay. And are we still within those time limits?
Go ahead, John.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hostica, I checked with the chief clerk's office. They advised me that since we had not formally turned the report into them at the point that the chair indicated he wanted to reconsider the vote, that as long as we placed information in the committee schedule within that 3-day time frame indicating that we were going to reconsider the vote, that was sufficient under House rules. And I did make sure that we had that information in a timely manner. And Ramona just basically told me, I did this last week, and she said you can consider it any time next week if you want to, as long as you have that notice in to the schedule.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just yeah. As long as we're discussing this, then, John, what is the normal time limit between the time that that the committee acts and the bill is required to be submitted to the chief clerk?
We have 3 days to get from the date that the bill is passed out by committee to get the committee report and all of the necessary information to the chief clerk's office.
That's 3 session days.
Yes,
so we meet
3
on a
session
Thursday.
Days. We have till the following Tuesday. We have Friday, Monday, Tuesday.
Just to give you an idea of the time frame, the day that the excise tax was defeated, I had signed the committee report that day. And as soon as that went down, I got a hold of John and told him not to turn it in, that I thought we needed to kind of regroup as a committee before we went to the floor with that. And it wasn't to do anything except make certain that when we got to the floor, if we decided to go ahead on it, that the committee had a hand in deciding that, and we just didn't let it go out there and get chewed up. Because I think this is an important bill, and we don't want to lose it by not having looked at it thoroughly enough in light of the mood on the House floor towards the metro bills. And I think we can change that mood a little bit by the sequence of bills. Lonnie wasn't here today, but I talked to him that same day after the excise tax went down about moving the bill that lowers the initiative and referendum for special districts down to, I think, 6 and 4%, which I think will put a lot of things in a better light when we take them to the floor with Metro.
Well, there were several other points, too, Mr. Chair. One is we had talked to Senator Otto. Obviously, considers this important. I think it was my sense that he wasn't quite aware that in taking one section out of the bill on the Senate floor, quite what that did. The other thing is, you may recall Representative Burton's comments on the floor on reference to the debate on the excise tax. He said this really should be handled by charter. Well, there isn't anything in this that would permit that. And it did seem, I think, as we looked at it, that probably what we ought to do is take a serious look at that, this and see what we could put in it legitimately, and how extensive it could be, so that we have something meaningful if we're going to go to the ballot. And I would still like to, going back to our earlier discussion, have us also consider, as only a companion, not as a substitute for this, a statute that would permit them, in the meantime, if they wanted to change the structure. I don't have any sense that anybody just wants to do that at the moment. But to have that as a companion that the legislature could consider and still put the charter provision on the ballot if you have, I think, all the possibilities you think are meaningful in it.
There's one thing you said I don't quite understand, Mr. Chairman. You said that the excise tax isn't included in this, so Metro could not handle an excise check. Excise tax provision if they had a own charter?
But if they had a charter and the charter was put together only in reference to what permitted them under this resolution, that is what would go to the voter. There's nothing in here, as I looked it over, that would, or the one that we passed, and I think that may be even true of the original one, I'm not sure. There's nothing in here that would permit them to put into the charter any control over a tax. In other words, keep in mind that a charter includes even, I suppose, a city and county charter, that the legislative body can still leave some things to its own. In my sense of reading this, if they adopted, the voters approved and they adopted the charter, that Metro would still have to come back to the legislature for approval to do a thing like the excess, like the excise tax defeated on the 40th. So the charter wouldn't do anything for them in that regard. Unless we changed it and put a provision in that said they could.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
In that regard, I guess we're getting beyond debating your motion we want to debate them or vote on the motion. But if you want to take questions on SJR2, I have a question.
Okay, and just in terms of what I did and why I did it, even if I had not supported this, if I'd have been in Ron's position and this had been somebody else's, say I'd voted no on this, I still would have gotten to the committee and said, well, let's put the brakes on it so it's got a fair shot on the floor. So it didn't have anything to do with whether I personally care whether it goes up or down. But I'll tell you, once they get smell blood out there and then the next bill that comes out from the committee and, well, we raised these the other day, have you addressed any of these problems? Well, this addressed one of them, but I don't think this would have raised anybody's comfort level in what we were doing with Metro.
I hope the bill we have tomorrow is the one that's going to be the next meltdown.
No, I don't think so. I think we've kept that relatively clean.
Okay.
And I'm also going to tell people that are interested in other boundary bills that this one has to move if we're going to do other things with them, that we haven't laundered it with a lot of other stuff. Okay, would you call the roll on reconsideration, Ed?
Representative Cease?
Aye.
Representative Hostica?
Aye.
Representative Oakley?
Aye.
Representative Stein?
Aye.
Representative Wehage?
Aye.
Representative Young?
Aye. Okay, we have it back in our possession. Yeah.
As long as it's back, and when the next time we look at this, I would like to have some clarity on what the sentence that starts on line 11 and keeps going is. It says, such officers shall among them exercise all the powers and perform all the duties as granted to, imposed upon, or distributed among district officers by the constitutional laws. With regard to the questions that Representative Cease has been raising, if the charter gives them the power to raise a tax, perform a service, is that what this means, so that they wouldn't have to have enumerated powers in this or direct authority within a constitution to raise a tax, whether that those phrases by themselves are general enough to give them essentially home rule on all matters?
Okay, we can check on that, and we'll have the references checked to see how broad that is. Okay, well,
adjourn the meeting. Yes.
Could I ask one thing? Would the committee have any objection if the committee at this point were to ask approval to have drafted a statute in reference to the form and structure issue that we could consider as a companion to this?
I'd have no objection. Okay, why don't we do that? You can work with John on that.
Thank you.